The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9. Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hope everyone's doing well. It's a beautiful Sunday morning. It is Father's Day. That's right. Yeah, believe it or not, I had to roll out of bed Father's Day to come here and spend Sunday morning with all of you. What are you going to say with both of you? I'm hoping there's more than two listeners to this show. So with everybody here, it's great to be here. You know how much I love actually being here on a Sunday. It was actually a great way to escape. Rather than being asked questions all morning of daddy, 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 dad, 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 daddy, 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 dad, 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 I get to come here and nobody talks to me. It's kind of a nice thing. I come here on a Sunday morning, 8 to 9 a.m., providing financial advice in a language you can understand. The phones don't work here on Sundays, so no one can call me. I get to keep my headset on. I might as well just be sitting in a closet right now. The only person that's here is just me and my producer, Tony, and we're overlooking the beautiful downtown North Beverly train station. A few cars going by. It's a nice day. It's Sunday. It's Father's Day. What are you doing for Father's Day today? And what will you make special for your dad, for your father? What will happen? What do you want to have happen if you are a dad? You know, one of the things we talked about last week was thinking about what are some of those pieces of advice, that financial pieces of advice that your dad gave you when you were younger, or maybe as you're older, that you wish you took better advice with, or maybe it was just some precious nuggets of advice that he gave to you that you continue to carry on today. Well, I guess the first piece of advice I got to give credit to my father for is he let me come into the business. So this is the business of money, and Dad let me take over the business. I merged in here. I came in 1991, joined the practice. Then Dad had started the firm in 1968, doing financial planning. One of the original financial planners in America, believe it or not. If you were to go to the Encyclopedia of Financial Planning, you'll actually find my dad's name in there somewhere. He's one of the original financial planners. There's about 40 or 50 of them or so, and now, almost 45,000 certified financial planners, hundreds of thousands of people who hold themselves out as financial advisors, financial consultants, financial planners, investment advisors, all that kind of stuff. But we've been doing financial planning for a very long time, and in fact, in April of 2018, not that far away, we're going to be celebrating our 50th anniversary of providing financial planning and investment advice to individuals and families who live right here on the North Shore and in the Merrimack Valley, and yeah, in the southern New Hampshire area as well. In fact, I don't know if she's listening today, but this past week, I actually expanded my horizons for where we do some financial planning. We had a listener, that's right, a listener who tunes into my podcasts. Because, yes, we can podcast this radio show either through NorthShore1049.com. You can go there and listen to the radio, listen to these broadcasts over and over again if you'd like. Or you can download the show through iTunes. It's called Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. And you can listen to our show. Well, we had a listener, someone that's been tuning in from Buffalo, New York. That's right, Buffalo, New York. I can't believe that someone actually had that much interest in Buffalo, New York to continuously listen to our show, purchase a book that I had written a while back, and said, you know what, I want to work with your firm. And so this past week, we made our second visit to them, and they became a great client. And it's really interesting to see how and why she chose a firm like ours, and maybe the reason why you choose the firm that you work with or choose to work on your own. You see, she had been divorced, and after getting divorced, many people in her community had reached out and said, hey, you got to talk to my guy. You got to talk to this financial planning firm. They'll do a great job for you. And she met with a bunch of different places, and none of them really did it for her. And so I said to her, what was it that we did that's different? You know, I try to have a pretty good pulse on what the other financial planning, what the financial planning community looks like and how it's delivering advice to individuals and families. But she said something of interest to me that that I thought was fascinating because I heard it, frankly, for a second time the day following at a meeting. And I thought it was just kind of different words, but the same basic idea. She says, you know, a lot of these financial planners out there right now, they position themselves as they're going to say they're fee-only financial planners or fiduciary-based financial planners. And that's great words and stuff, but what does it really mean? And they say, well, we're going to place your interest first. And yes, we do all of that stuff at our office. But for the most part, in this business, they want to get paid. I don't know, whatever type of job you do, I don't care whether you sweep streets, whether you wash cars, whether you, you know, produce a radio show, or whether you work the line at a restaurant, everybody wants to get paid. And rightfully so, you should. That's your job. That's why we all go to work every day. So financial planners have a right to get paid as well. But what was interesting was she said to me, you know, the financial planners that I met with, they all wanted to get paid a fee for the assets that were placed under my management. But when I asked them the question, tell me what I get for the fee, their answer was really weak. And she said, it seems to me that when I listen to your show on the radio each and every week, you talk about so many other things that I can expect from a financial planner if I'm paying them an annual management fee. And when I raised this issue with many of the financial advisors I talked with in Buffalo, New York, Amherst, New York, and surrounding communities, I wasn't getting that. And it was frustrating to me. And so I thought that was what was interesting. What she said was that, you know, people want to get paid a fee for investment advice to build an asset allocation portfolio, to find an investment strategy that works well for me, to periodic make changes. But that's all? That's all, frankly. You know, I go around the country, actually, and I train financial advisors on being better financial planners. And I say to them, I put a picture on a slide up on the wall, and I show this picture of a guy that's wearing a nice suit. He's standing in this place with a bunch of people around him. And the title that goes across the top says, is this guy worth 1%? Or would you pay this man 1%? And then I drop some bullets that go in front of this picture. And I say, well, he greets you when you walk in the door and makes you feel really comfortable. He really spends time to get to know you. He understands what you like, what you don't like, what you really want to stay away from, what you absolutely don't want to have, but also what you want to have. He's very careful to check in with you to make sure that you're satisfied with everything that's going on. And over time, as you begin to get to know this person, he can almost guess what it is that you want and what you're looking for, despite the conditions of the day. And I said, did I just describe a financial planner? Is he worth 1%? And half the hands in the room said, Mark, you nailed it. That's exactly what we did. You didn't talk about investments. You didn't talk about picking stocks or mutual funds or anything like that. You did exactly what we do every day. And I said to them, you know what? The picture of the guy on the screen, he's a maitre d'. He's a maitre d'. Would you pay a maitre d' 1% of your meal every time you walked in and out of a restaurant? Just because he was nice to you and checked in periodically to make sure everything was okay? Just because he knew that you prefer your water served without ice rather than with ice? Is that worth the 1%? Would you do that for a maitre d'? Probably not. Financial advisors have to offer so much more. They need to recognize that investment services is not financial planning. In fact, investment services is just part of what financial planning is overall. When you're hiring a financial planner, you want to get advice in the areas of should I buy or lease my next car? If I want to sell my house, can I afford to move into a retirement community? Can I downsize? What if I want to buy a second place down in Florida? Or maybe I'm thinking about purchasing a summer place up by the lake. How should I own it? What if it means me having to take money out of my investment account to finance that purchase? What about helping out mom and dad? What's the right tax withholdings that I should have on my pay stub? Should I participate in my 401k plan? Should it be a Roth 401k? Should it be a regular 401k? Should I convert my IRA to a Roth? Lots and lots of questions that you need answers to, but you just don't necessarily see your financial advisor oftentimes as the person who can provide that advice. You see, oftentimes they say, well, we'll give you a financial plan. But ultimately, that financial plan results in, well, now that the financial plan's done, give me your money. Let's place it under management. And then when I meet with you on an ongoing basis after that, we'll just talk about your investment account. Well, a real financial planner, in fact, I take great pride in the fact that our firm does this, is that not only do we provide financial planning once, but we provide it always. We do something that's called scenario planning. I want you to know that each time something pops into your head that says, well, what if we spent a little bit more in retirement than we're spending now? And we start to quantify that. Oh, what if I wanted to quit my job and cut back on my pay and take a smaller job that pays less money but has a lot less pressure? How would it impact my retirement plan? What if I wanted to be more aggressive? What if I wanted to buy one of these really risky stocks? How would that impact my financial plan? That's called scenario planning. Wondering what it would mean to sell a piece of property. What if I got married? What if I got divorced? What if someone died? And then being the resource for answers to financial life's questions. You know, my kids want to borrow some money, but I'm not quite sure what to do. You know, I was talking with a client this past week, and they're approaching retirement, they're considering retirement. They've got two kids, married. In fact, both kids that are in their 30s or so make more money than mom and dad do. Not surprising this day and age, where both couples, both, you know, the husband and wife, they're both working. They find that the kids are making more money than the parents ever did. Yet, interestingly, the kids still are hoping that mom and dad will give them money to help cover some of their expenses. But interestingly, it's not so that they can save more money for their future. It's just that they continue to live beyond their means despite making what they're making right now. And so this client was in the office and they asked me what I thought about a question that was being asked of their child, asked from their child. And they got a little uncomfortable. They didn't know what to say. They said, my son told me, I understand you're retiring this year. That's pretty exciting. You know, your grandkids, you're going to get to spend more time with the grandkids. And we always appreciate the fact that you're babysitting them all the time. And you give us the freedom and flexibility to go out on the weekends and do what we want. And you're so happy to come over and help out the kids. Well, we've got an idea. Maybe for retirement, what you should do is create a family vacation. And maybe you should take the entire family away to Disney World for a week. Wouldn't it be a great memorable experience? Wouldn't it be a great opportunity for you to spend time with your grandkids and see your grandkids' face light up when they go to see Mickey Mouse as he's walking through Main Street, USA? Wouldn't it be great to spend more time with the family? And the parents said, who's paying? Well, that's what you would do with your retirement. Don't you want to make these memories? And the parents like, Who do you think you are that I got this money laying around that the first thing I'm going to do when my paycheck stops, when I'm trying to figure out where income is going to come from the Social Security check, perhaps a small pension, maybe having to draw money from my investment account, knowing that I'm not going to get a paycheck ever again. You think I should pull 20 to 30 grand out and take you and your kids and us on a vacation that I pay 100% for? And they were taken aback. The kid said, well, isn't that what every retired parent does? What do you think of that? Folks, there's a lot of misunderstanding that's out there. A lot of situations that we have symptomatically created because we've been too kind and too generous to our children without throwing out some of the hard life issues that says, you know what? Maybe you should stumble a little bit. Maybe you should realize that you have to handle some of the things on your own. You know, if that's one of the lessons that my father taught me, it was that. It was, look, you want to go on a vacation, you want to go do things, that's fine, we'll split it with you. This is not when I was married, when I was a kid. When I was married, I was on my own, I assure you of that. But are we as adult parents being way too generous to our children? Are we getting sucked into being too generous despite the fact that they're making more money than we are? Is that a challenge? Is that something we need to spend more time talking about? Well, we will. We've got to take a quick break. But when we get back, I got lots of things I want to share with you. I want to talk to you about this idea about the kids coming home and saying, I want to buy my first house. but the only way that I can buy it is with your help. How are you going to answer that question? We'll talk about that when we get back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. This is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Each week, I try to provide listeners with financial advice in a language you can understand. And much of my advice comes from real-life situations that happens in my office, Friedman Financial, each and every day. You see, at Friedman Financial, we help individuals and families create smart strategies for spending money in retirement. Our approach is committed to placing your interests first. And best of all, Friedman Financial is independent, and we're a fee-based financial planning and investment management firm. We're absolutely committed to helping you get your financial house in order. When you're ready to get serious about your financial planning needs, give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108, or on the web at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com.
If I had $1 million.
Good morning, and welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. It is Father's Day, Sunday Father's Day. Hope you're going to a ball game. Hope you're going to take Dad out, do something nice with him. Give him a break, because, you know, some news came across. In fact, I had this in my newsletter this past week. Did you know, remember about 4 or 5 weeks ago when there was Mother's Day, we talked about the value of mom, and we went to salary.com. You can go to this website, salary.com, and take the survey to figure out what is mom's real intrinsic value for all of the stuff that she does around the house. And the average mom, if she was given an hourly wage for all of the jobs that she does, and you added them all up, the average mom should be making around 100 to 125 grand. Well, here's a sad story. There was a report that came out. What's the average dad worth around the house? And you know what we're worth? 75 to 80% less than what mom's worth. We're worth about 20 to 25 grand. That's about it. You know, you don't get paid for asking kids to get you the remote control, or asking the kids to say, hey, can you get me some more water? Or can you get that ketchup out of the... You don't get paid. I mean, I thought you get paid for delegation, but I guess you really don't. They started going over the stuff that dads do, or dads think that offer value to the house, but they're really not. You know, playing the foreman from the kitchen table while you're watching the kids cut the lawn and weed the beds. You're not making much money on that, Dad. Sorry. But today is Father's Day, so give Dad a break. You know, entertain him a little bit. If Dad wants you to go weed the beds, he wants you to go water the plants, he wants you to paint the house or wax the car, just do it today. It's Dad's Day. Or better yet, why don't you surprise him? That's the best thing. I think the best thing that my kids could ever do is to surprise me. I got 5 kids that are at home, and they're always like, Dad, what can we get you for Father's Day? What can we get you for Father's Day? What can we do for Father's Day? I said, surprise me. Do something that I would have always expected you to do, but you never do until I tell you 9 times that you have to get it done. Do one of those things, and that will be the best Father's Day present you could ever give to me. So, yes, it is Father's Day. I'm still trying to figure out where we're going to go for dinner. They said to me, Dad, what do you want to do for dinner for Father's Day? I said, you know what? I'm very happy staying home, lighting the grill and doing nothing. Oh, yeah, but we wanted to go out for dinner. I said, well, wait a second. Didn't you just ask me what I want to do for Father's Day? I said I want to stay home and just light the grill and hang out. Yeah, but it's Father's Day. We should go out for dinner. Why? Because that's what they want to do. And it turns out that's what we're doing. I don't even get to do what I wanted to do for Father's Day, which was just to leave the radio station this morning, go home, hang out, maybe do a few things around the house that I look forward to doing. I usually like to sit, actually, believe it or not, in front of my piano, in the living room. I open up the door, the front door to my house, open up the windows, and I play the piano for about an hour, half hour to an hour. And all these neighbors come by, they hear me playing the piano, some knock on the door, some swing by. People sometimes pop in, they even sing some songs with me. I love to do that. But nah, the kids just say, where can we go today? So, sorry folks, I won't be around doing that today in my neighborhood. I will be out for dinner with the kids. Not that that's a bad thing. I like to go out too. All right. I was telling you in the last segment about this concept that people have been asking lately about buying their first house. When do you know it's the right time to buy your first house? And in fact, if you drive around the streets, probably today, I know it's Father's Day, but that's not going to stop a lot of homeowners from hanging up open house signs. I know the streets were packed last week with open houses. And amazing, there's two houses on my street, actually, that are for sale. And I was blown away by the number of cars sitting out in front of these houses. Yeah, they're nice houses, but I didn't know there was such a huge pent-up demand. Folks, people are buying houses, and I haven't heard whether the house got sold over the weekend, last weekend, but I wouldn't be surprised. There was a lot of interest at this house. Anyways, we all know that homeownership is the cornerstone of the American dream. But before you start looking, there's a number of things you need to know. You know, buying a home should be viewed as a lifestyle investment first, and only secondly, as a financial investment. Let me be sure I say that again to you. I want you to really understand what I said there. Buying a house should be viewed as a lifestyle investment, not necessarily as a financial investment. You generally don't move into your house with the expectation that you're going to get a return on your investment that you're going to be able to use towards your retirement or anything like that. I see people retiring every day. 65% of my clients are in retirement. The last thing that they plan to do is to take the equity in their home, turn it into cash, and then allow it to produce income to them to support their life in retirement. Do you know why they don't do that? Because they have to live somewhere. They have to live somewhere. And if you really thought about how much money you put into your home year after year, month after month, we sometimes discount how much we put into our homes. When you really look at what the net value was that you got out of your house, it's not necessarily a great investment, but it was a great lifestyle strategy. A great lifestyle investment, frankly. You can call it that. It's your home. It's where you feel comfortable. Think about how often it is when you get invited to go visit the aunts or visit the cousins, visit grandma, or visit a friend, and you go stay at their house. It's not the same as being at home, is it? Even if it is a nicer home than yours, even if it even appears more settled, more established, bigger, more grandiose, it's still not your bed. It's still not your pillow. When you go to a hotel, you could go stay at the Ritz. But I will tell you, after a couple days, you'll say to yourself, the Ritz is great. This is a magnificent place. But I kind of miss my own bed. I miss being able to crash in my own chair, watching TV, grabbing stuff out of my own refrigerator to get something to eat, and not have to worry about paying for my own lunch, paying for my own breakfast, signing for this or whatever. Homeownership is great, but you have to find the right time to do it. You know, in real estate prices, they're going to fluctuate quite considerably. And if you aren't ready to settle down in one spot for 5 years or more, my advice to you is don't buy the house. That's right. If you don't plan on staying in the home that you want to purchase, unless there's a few people that are going to be listening to the show and they say, Mark, you're nuts. I buy houses. I go in there. I purchase them. I flip them and I sell them. You're not looking to make that a permanent residence for yourself. You're looking to do that purely as an investment. For most people, buying a home is a lifestyle investment. They look to find a place where they're going to feel comfortable in the community, to raise their kids in a school division that they like, to be comfortable knowing that the hospitals, the restaurants, the gas stations, the supermarkets, the drugstores are convenient to them. But know that you're going to be there 5 years or more before you make any type of mental and physical commitment to purchase that house. So now let's say you're ready to take the plunge. How do you know what you can afford? How will you know? Now, many young folks say, well, I'll just go to the bank and I'll ask them what I'm pre-qualified for when it comes to a mortgage. Bad decision. Why is that a bad decision? You shouldn't figure out what the bank says you can afford. You need to figure out what you think you can afford. Just because, let's say, for instance, your household income is $100,000. Let's say your household income is $100,000. The bank could come back to you and say, well, you're qualified for $28,000, let's call it $38,000 in annual mortgage payments. So divide that by 12, and you're going to come up to somewhere around a little bit more than $2,000 a month in principal and interest payments. And you might say, well, $2,000 a month, I can afford that. Maybe I could do that. And it, with interest rates being as low as they are, man, you might be able to qualify for a very large mortgage, maybe $400,000, maybe $500,000. Are you ready for that? Because are you ready to walk into a home without any money down? Let's say you qualified for a $400,000 mortgage. That means you should be looking that that's and you say you want to buy a you want to get that mortgage for $400,000. That means you may be looking at a home that's somewhere in the $500,000 range. Is that appropriate for a first home? Is that the right amount? Think about this. First things first, you have to ask yourself, do I have enough resources available to me to put 20% down? If you don't have the resources available to put 20% down on your home, I would caution you on purchasing a home. And you're going to say, well, I'll never have 20% to put down. Based on the way I spend my money, based on the way I work and all that kind of stuff, I'll never have 20% to put down. And if I don't buy a house now, all I'm doing is throwing money away in the form of rent to an apartment or to a condo. Folks, you know, home values go down. Home prices just don't go up, and they certainly don't stabilize. They've been all over the place. Go to Zillow.com. Go to Zillow.com. Find an address. Find your address. Find your parents' house. And take a look on Zillow to see what the estimated price fluctuation has been of that home over the past 10 years. I think you're going to be absolutely amazed to see how much the value of that home in perception has changed price-wise. I want you to ask yourself, could you stomach that kind of volatility? And what if you made the mistake of buying it near the top price? What happens? What happens if, let's say, you bought a home that was worth $400,000 and you said, well, my banker said to me, I can get the house for I can get a $375,000 mortgage and put $25,000 down. That's less than 10% of the value, right? And all of a sudden, you lose your job. Or you get this wonderful offer. You're transferred to California, transferred to Tennessee, transferred to Florida, and you need to sell your house. But all of a sudden, your home can only be sold for $360,000. And you might say, oh, that would never happen. Not only will that happen, does that happen, it will happen. The value of your house is not going in one direction. And there will be periods of time when it's worth more or less. And imagine this. If your house could be sold at $360,000, remember what you borrowed on your house? $375,000? You know what happens when you sell your house? You owe the buyer money. Or you owe the bank money, I should say. You owe the bank money. Could you ever imagine having to move out of your house and having to pay the bank the money? That's not why you bought the house. Folks, we need to be clear. And so when we get back from our break, I want to walk you through some of these ratios that are really important to buying a house. What does the marketplace look like today? What is an appropriate amount of money to borrow? What should you be considering when you buy that new home? I don't want to see you get stuck. I don't want to see your house being foreclosed upon. And I certainly don't want you knocking on mom and dad's doors 5 years, 10 years down the road saying, Mom, I need money because I made a poor investment decision. When we get back, we're going to talk about all of that stuff. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Isn't it time to get serious about your retirement planning? Friedman Financial is a financial planning and investment management firm in Peabody. They've been helping professionals and retirees put solid strategies into play for 40 years. When you're planning to get serious about planning for retirement, call Friedman Financial for a free initial consultation at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or go online to FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman, President and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. We are a financial planning and investment management firm, and we provide advice to individuals and families who live right here on the North Shore, in the Merrimack Valley, and in the southern parts of New Hampshire. We actually provide that advice also to other people all around the country, but 90% of our clients live within 10 miles of the Treetop Studios right here on Enon Street in Beverly. That's right. People come to our office. We do financial planning eyeball to eyeball. I don't try to do it through the internet. I don't try to do it over the phone. Folks, when it comes time to making financial decisions, important financial decisions about your money, you got to do it eyeball to eyeball. It's important. We've got to be honest about it with ourselves about how we handle money, how we talk to our spouses about money, how we talk to our financial advisor about money so that we're making smart decisions and we're not finding ourselves in a danger spot along the way. Well, hey, just a quick piece of information for you. Did you know what today is the last day to do? Today is the last day something is accepted. Today, Father's Day, is the last day that you can use your American Express card at Costco. That's right. Big day at Costco. So if you wanted to just, you know, put that last piece of money, you wanted to make that last purchase on your Costco American Express card, today is the last day to do it. Then maybe they'll have grill specials over there. Maybe they'll have steak specials because it is Father's Day too, you know. Get that and go spend the, try to get those American Express points over at Costco. By now, if you've been a Costco member, you've probably received your new, I think it's a Citigroup, Citigroup Visa card. I know ours came already. It came earlier this week, and it will just happen. It'll just be the flip of a switch. On Sunday, you are using your American Express card at Costco, but starting Monday, that card will no longer be accepted. It will be denied, not allowed at all at Costco. You'll have to use your Visa card. So just letting you know that, little tidbits of information, financial advice in a language you can understand, news you can use right here on North Shore 104.9. That's right. Today is the last day. So if you wanted to head over to the liquor store at Costco, I don't even know if the liquor store is even open on Sundays at Costco. This is it. This is your last chance. Then time to move on to the city card. Totally up to you. All right. We were talking about how to buy a house. We were talking about some of the ratios that you need to consider because years ago, 2008, 2009, the banks were lending way more money than they should have. Mortgage brokers lending way more money than they should have. And because interest rates were so low, people were borrowing money like crazy and thinking that they could have bought houses bigger than they could afford. Well, here's a couple of these important expense ratios that you need to know about when it comes to buying a house. The first one is what's called the housing expense ratio. The housing expense ratio compares basic monthly housing costs to the buyer's gross monthly income. That's before taxes and other deductions. So think about this. Let's say you're making, let's say it's $5,000 a month. $5,000 a month, that's your gross income. So times 12, that's a $60,000 income. Okay. So let's say you're making $5,000 a month. What we're trying to figure out, what are the monthly costs? If you added up all of the monthly costs, what would they be? And then we're going to divide that into this $5,000 number. Basic costs include your mortgage, your insurance, and your property taxes. So think about that. Your mortgage expense, your insurance. Now, I'm not talking about automobile insurance. I'm not talking about homeowners. Not talking about automobile. Not talking about life insurance or disability. So your mortgage expense, that's principal and interest, homeowner's insurance, and property tax. I want you to think about what all those costs are. So as I think about a traditional mortgage, many people have a mortgage. Well, it's hard to say what people have as a traditional right now. But let's say someone's principal and interest is, say, $2,500. Is their mortgage? Let's say their insurance cost might be a couple hundred dollars a month. So that's $2,700. And let's say property taxes are, I don't know, a couple more hundred dollars a month. Let's call it total is $3,000. Let's just use that as the number. $3,000 between principal interest, mortgage, principal and interest, insurance, and property tax. $3,000 a month. What percent is $3,000 of $5,000? Because remember I said we were going to use that example. If your gross monthly income is $5,000, that number is 60%. Think about that. 3,000 divide 3 by 5. 3,000 by 5,000. That's 60%. If you said, I wanted to have a mortgage of $2,500, I want to, with property tax and insurance, have a $3,000 a month. You would be denied at the bank for lending. The number you want to try to focus on, you want to stay under 28%. So even take $5,000 a month. What's 30%? What's 20% of $5,000? Well, that's $1,000 plus another. Call it $1,500 a month. Could you, right now, say that your monthly housing costs, mortgage, interest, insurance, and property tax, doesn't represent 28% of your gross income or less? You should sit down and think about looking at that number. If your number is 28% or less, you're in good shape. You have nothing to worry about. You're going to be able to do just fine. A bank is going to see you as a good risk. That's if you're owning a house or even if you're considering a house. Because you have to try to figure out what is that monthly mortgage payment. You know, I don't have the calculator here in front of me, but I could probably figure out that for every $100,000 that you want to borrow, I think it's, and I, like I said, I don't have the calculator in front of me. I think it's $800 a month for every $100,000 in mortgage that you have. So let's say you have a $200,000 mortgage on a 30-year basis. Your monthly, your principal and interest is probably around $1,600 a month. If it's $100,000, your principal and interest is probably $800, plus, of course, taxes, plus, of course, insurance. So figure that out. Ask yourself, what is my gross income? Are we making collectively $100,000? Are we making $200,000? And just because you're making $200,000 doesn't mean you should max out what you can get on a mortgage. Your income could change rather dramatically. You know, I oftentimes find there's a lot of people who say, well, I've been getting paid $200,000 a year. My company laid me off. And now they say, I can't find a job. What do you mean you can't find a job? There's no jobs out there. No, there's no jobs that are out there that want to pay you the ridiculous amount of money that your previous company was paying you. That's why they laid you off, so they didn't have to pay it anymore. I think we all have this little ego that seems to allow us to think that we are worth a lot more than we think we are when it comes to payroll. Yes, we may all be worth a lot. We're all special in some kind of ways. Well, I get my own opinion on that whole kind of thing. But we all seem to think that what we're worth is certainly more than what our employer is willing to pay for us, pay us. But when the employer decides to lay us off, they're basically saying to you, we like you a lot. You might be a great employee. Nice guy. You notice how they always say, he was a really nice guy, or we really liked him a lot. We love you. We're really going to miss you. But no way in hell am I paying you that much money anymore. You cost us way too much money. So just remember that. Be realistic. Are you getting paid more than you're worth right now? Is there the potential that your pay could get cut back? Because once you buy that mortgage is the mortgage. You're responsible for that. So use that number, 28%, like I talked to you about. Take your gross income. And, you know, some people might say, well, I don't work. How am I going to be able to get a mortgage? Well, some people get alimony. Some people get interest and dividend and capital gain or trust income that they get. That might work. But you know what? If your income comes exclusively from Social Security, or perhaps Social Security and a pension, or Social Security and you're drawing income from your investments to support your needs and that's it, it may be more and more difficult to get that mortgage. If you're looking to get a mortgage, and I'm really talking to people that are much younger right now that are looking to buy their first home, make sure that you're finding a piece of property that will allow you to cover your monthly housing costs of mortgage interest, principal, taxes, and insurance of under 28% of your gross monthly income. All right, that's called the housing expense ratio. The next one, though, is called the total obligations ratio. Because some people will say, well, wait a second, I still owe money to a few other places. I might have an auto loan payment, a lease payment. I might have a credit card bill. I might have student loans to pay. Well, if a bank is going to take the risk, and that's what banks do. Banks take risks. And they take their risks by giving you money with the hope that you will pay it back. And the greater the risk they see you, the higher the interest rate they charge, as they should. And I will tell you, you view yourself as a much lesser risk than the bank does. The bank has no feelings, and they shouldn't. The bank has to look at this as a business decision. Should they lend you money first? And if they do choose to lend you, how much do they need to charge you so that they can feel good about the fact that they will get paid back for the entire term of the loan? The total obligation ratio that we're talking about is the percentage of income required to service all of your total monthly payments. So besides mortgage, insurance, and property tax, think about student loans, other installment loans that you have, credit card balances older than 10 months. All of those are added into your basic housing costs. Now you add up all of those monthly costs. Divide that into your gross monthly income. It should not exceed 36%. So remember we talked about the fact that your housing expense ratio shouldn't exceed 28%? Your other monthly obligations, student loans, credit card debts, other installment loans, they shouldn't exceed another 8 to 9% on top of that 28. You want to be careful. You want all of your loan, all of your monthly payment obligations to be under 36%. Are they? Are they? That's all you need to do. You don't need to walk into a bank and say, hey, could you pre-qualify me for a mortgage? You don't need to waste anybody's time because it's very easy to tell you whether you're going to be qualified or not. Understand what your monthly costs are. Understand what your gross monthly income is. With those two numbers in hand, you can figure out whether you'd qualify for a mortgage or not. And like I said in the first, in the second segment of this show, if you're thinking about buying a new home, I want you to think about this. Will you be there for 5 years or more? If the answer is I'm not sure, I would strongly caution you against making such a large commitment to purchasing a piece of property. I got lots more thoughts on how you should go about wondering whether you are ready to buy your first home. Other things to consider, other costs to explore, all with financial advice in a language you can understand. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
Don't have enough time to go to the gym? Grab your phone and download Bench Bro, the hottest finger-tapping fitness app.
With Bench Bro, you'll test your reflexes, your concentration, and your finger tapping skills as Bench Bro helps you achieve your virtual dream physique.
This is a fitness resolution you can finally keep. Download our free app, Bench Bro, today.
Bench Bro.
Available on the App Store
and Google Play.
No membership required.
Do you ever wonder whether you'll have enough money to retire? Retiring for the Genius is a blueprint to prepare for a comfortable retirement. This easy-to-read guidebook on living your life in retirement is written by certified financial planner Mark Friedman and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 o'clock until 9 a.m. You'll find the tools and templates helpful so you can prepare to make smart decisions on how to spend your money in retirement. If you're older than 55 and expect to spend between $4,000 and $10,000 a month in retirement, Retiring for the Genius is a treasure map for achieving your successful retirement. When it comes to retiring, don't be a dummy. Pick up a copy of Retiring for the Genius at Amazon.com.
Pick up your treasure map for retirement. Available now at Amazon.com. Search Mark Friedman, Retiring for the Genius.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I am president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. We've been providing financial planning and investment advice to individuals and families who live on the North Shore, in the Merrimack Valley, in the southern New Hampshire area, and also those folks who have had roots in these areas, but have, of course, migrated out throughout the country. Perhaps they're snowbirds. We still take care of you as well. Our firm manages more than $300 million for individuals. The vast majority of our clients are either approaching retirement or they're in retirement. Many people come to us for the simple answer to the question, I've worked with a number of financial advisors, but now it's time to get serious. Mark, when I listen to you on the radio, from what I've heard from other people who have worked with you, you sound like the type of person who does take this seriously, and we do. We're going to take a look at everything in your financial life, not just your investment accounts, not just the annuity that you own. We're going to look at the bank accounts that you have. We're going to look at your tax returns, your pay stubs, your benefits booklets, your retirement benefits you get. We're going to look at Social Security. We're going to look at your wills, at your trusts, your homeowners policies, your automobile policies, your umbrella policies, stock options. We're going to look at everything. Because without having a full and complete and total understanding of where everything is and what everything is worth, how can anybody provide you with prudent, fiduciary-based advice so that you can live the lifestyle that you want without any surprises? Oftentimes, many people say, well, Mark, I've been working with all these different advisors. I just don't have one person who can do it all for me. And so more and more people are coming to our office with statements from 5, 6, 7, 9 different financial advisors, whether it's stockbrokers, insurance salesmen, mutual fund salespeople, brokers, other financial advisors, people from work, whatever it is. And they say, you know what? I just want to move it all to one place. I'm going to have one guy handle it all. Now, some people will say, well, Mark, I was always told, don't put all of my eggs in one basket. Trust me, you are not putting all of your eggs in one basket. What you're doing is you're building a financial planning strategy that places your money in a multitude of different places. So you are spreading out your risk, but you're getting objective financial advice from the perspective of understanding where everything is and what everything is worth. We provide a free weekly newsletter. It comes out each and every Friday. You can get it landing in your inbox at 10:30. I've been sending one out, I can't believe it, since March of 2009. Been a long time that we've been doing this every single Friday. Have never missed a Friday. 10:30 in the morning, you can get it delivered, which where we provide little pieces of advice. One of the pieces of advice that we provide in the newsletter is this story that I've been telling you about today about, are you ready to buy your first home? We've been talking about what you need to know when it's time to buy a first home. If you want that free newsletter, very simple. All you need to do is go to my website, FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Go to the bottom of my website, click on the button that says sign up for Mark's newsletter, and boom, it shows right up in your newsletter starting, well, this upcoming Friday. I'll have you all registered. Now, for those of you that, and many of you do, you call my office and you say, you know, I'd like to explore what it means to do business with Friedman Financial. I'm not ready to do anything yet. I know all of a sudden everyone has their relationships they have with other people, and I absolutely want to respect that. And I will tell you, I would say that probably more than 50%, yes, that's right, more than 50% of the time, I will meet with people that either call my office or come into our office, and I'll tell them to keep the relationship that they have with their existing advisor because they're doing a good job. Or perhaps you're doing it on your own and you just want a second opinion. Oftentimes, I will tell you, you know, you're doing a great job. Keep this up. But when it's time to get serious, when you want someone who's going to understand where everything is and put it all together, frankly, the number one reason people usually come over to work with us is they're worried. They say, you know what? If something happens to me, my spouse won't know the first thing of what to do. And I want to be sure there's somebody in place to take care of everything if something happens to me. That's frankly one of the biggest reasons people come to see us. You see, we're really good. One of the things we become expert in is helping clients figure out how to draw money from their investment accounts without having to lock it up in guaranteed accounts, but have flexibility to take monthly income to support their lifestyle for the rest of their lives. In fact, we send out more than $1,200,000 every month in income checks for our clients. Some might take $500 a month. Some might take $10,000 a month. It's different for each person. There's no right or wrong answer. Many people will ask me, Mark, have I saved enough money for retirement? Or how am I doing compared to other people? I'll tell you this. We have some clients that can spend $2,000 a month in retirement and not figure out how to spend it all. And others that take $20,000, that spend $20,000 a month and come up short every single month. There is no right or wrong answer. And a lot of it, you need to know this because I'm trying to teach this to my kids. How much you make has nothing to do with how much you're worth. lot of people will walk around with these credentials saying, I'm Dr. So-and-so, or I'm an attorney so-and-so, and I'm making, you know, a nice six-figure income. But when it comes time to retirement and they realize they haven't put anything aside, they've just blown it all. And then there's this other couple that comes to us and says, you know, Mark, I'm an engineer at GE. I make 100, 120 grand. My wife works a part-time over at CVS, makes an extra $20,000. Yet they have $1 million saved. How is that possible? It's very possible. It's all called living within your means. And I've talked about this. I'm seeing this happen with a lot of 30 and 40-year-olds. Last week in my newsletter, I went on a bit of a rant telling parents to stop being so financially generous to their kids, especially those who are making more money than you are, yet are living beyond their means and still needing to figure out a way to support their lifestyle by relying on you for gifts and benefits. And what I'm finding all too often is that the adult parents have a very difficult time saying no. And it's not that they have a difficult time saying no because they don't love their children any more or any less. Sometimes they worry, will their children get angry at them if they say they can't afford it? You might think I'm nuts. I see this every day. We see parents that are traditionally saying, well, you know, I'll pay for daycare. Or I'll pay, here's an extra $2,000 a month, or here's an extra $1,000 a month. And the kids go ahead and blow it. And meanwhile, the kids are still building up credit card debt. They're not paying down student loan debt that they have. They live in a home larger than they could afford. They can't put all the furniture into their home because they don't have enough cash flow around anyways. But they have to carry around their Louis Vuitton bags, wear their Robert Graham shirts, have the fanciest of shoes, drive the nicest of cars, lease very nice vehicles. Yet a lot of it is a facade. A lot of it is because mom and dad are helping them out financially. And many cases, many times we are seeing with clients, they really can't afford to do it, but they feel like they've gotten into such a rut, into such a, such a way of doing the things that they're so used to doing it that they just can't break the habit, and they just do it. And the kids, they don't even realize that their parents are actually seeing their retirement life impacted because of the parents' generosity. What I think is even further challenging, though, is the fact that the parents and the kids can't talk about it. Many people ask us, Mark, can you help us with that? Part of what we do as financial planners is we hold family meetings. Now, it's not to reprimand one side or the other, but sometimes it's easier to play mediator or facilitator of a conversation so that all of the issues are placed on the table. Everybody has a much greater, much more open understanding of what's going on, what the wishes are, and things become a lot better. Because, you know, generations ago, we were brought up to say, we don't talk about money in this house. No one talks about what anybody made, what things cost. Look, my kids in my house actually know how much the mortgage is. They know what the electric bill is. They know what we pay every month for certain expenses. I let them. I want them to know. You know what? I want them to appreciate the fact that if you want to live in a nice house, you want to drive a nice car, you want to have a decent lifestyle, you need to make enough money to cover these expenses. Because frankly, they're not getting it in the schools. No one wants to talk about it. We have an obligation to have open and honest conversations about money with our kids, as they do with you. And if you need help doing that, we can help facilitate that family meeting. I want to finish up one thought before we head out of here today. I've been talking about this thing, are you ready to buy your first home? And I've been giving some advice to folks on some of the things to consider. Let me recap a few things we talked about. Number one, if you're thinking of buying a home, make sure you're planning on staying in it for 5 years or more. If you're not, don't buy the house. Number two, if you're planning on borrowing money, and most people are, we can't just simply pay cash for a house. When it's time to get your mortgage, consider this ratio that's called the housing expense ratio. Make sure that your mortgage cost, your principal and interest, your insurance, and your property tax for the home don't exceed 28% of your gross annual income. You can do it by the month, too, if you want, because most people think about their mortgage, insurance, and taxes at a monthly level. So what's that monthly cost? Look at your monthly gross income. Don't let it exceed 28%. Also, don't ever let your total cost, your total obligations ratio exceed 36%. What that means is mortgage, principal and interest, insurance, taxes, but also other outstanding loans, student loans, credit card payments, automobile loans. All of those together should never exceed more than 36% of your gross monthly income. And if you're thinking of buying a house, after you've put down the down payment, after you've gone ahead and bought the house, make sure that there's at least $5,000 to $10,000 hanging around in a bank account so that you can go out and buy the stuff that you absolutely forgot you'd need to own when you buy your first house. What you will find is when you buy your first home, spending $1,000 at Home Depot is like buying a candy bar at CVS. It's just going to happen. You're going to want to paint the walls. And you're going to go, really? Paint costs that much? But you just can't buy paint. You got to buy drop cloths. You got to buy brushes. You got to buy rollers. You got to buy the handles for the rollers. You got to buy tape. You got to buy all sorts of things. Then you're going to realize, oh, we have to take the trash out. Oh, we need trash barrels. Barrels aren't cheap either. You got to buy trash barrels, and you want ones that are of decent quality so that you can bring them to the end of the street and they'll still be there. You need a mailbox. You need a lawnmower. You need a shovel. You need a hammer. You need a screwdriver. You need lots of little things. You need light bulbs. All of those things add up. Make sure that there's money around to pay for all of that stuff. If you have all of those costs, and if you have money available for all of those things, then go for it. You've got my thumbs up. You've got my okay, because honestly, owning a home is a great thing to have. It's nice to have your own bed, nice to have your own pillow, nice to be able to invite people over and know that there's room for them. But don't overdo it. Make sure that the house that you want is the house that you'll stay in. And you will find that not only is a house a great place to stay, it's a great lifestyle investment. It is not a financial investment where you're going to get a great return on it when all is said and done and you're going to walk away with cash. You're always going to want to live somewhere. You're going to need that money for that, but don't expect to do it for retirement. All right, we got to get out of here. It's the end of the day today. I'm going somewhere out for dinner for Father's Day, even though I said to my kids, I'd like to stay home for dinner for Father's Day. They said, Dad, it's Father's Day. We got to go out. So much for getting to do what I want to do on Father's Day. But perhaps you'll get to do what you want to do on Father's Day. I've got to get out of here, though. Hope you have a wonderful Father's Day. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.